Dip, 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 dip. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la. Good evening. This is the Labor Exchange, and I'm Dennis Kreese, a member of the Boulder Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The subject of tonight's program is Labor Day 2018, Labor and Political Issues. And with us is a great guest to address this subject. It's Dennis Doherty, Executive Director for the Colorado AFL-CIO. Dennis, thanks for being back here at KGNU here on the Labor Exchange.
Thank you for the invite, Dennis.
Dennis, we got a lot to cover, so let's get into first an update. Our last interview was October 30th, 2017. You had just started in this position as Executive Director, Colorado AFL-CIO. At this point, how would you evaluate, assess meeting your goals, objectives since that time?
Thank you for the question, Dennis. Out of the gate, I wanted to have a deep understanding of the needs and challenges of all our affiliate unions and its members. And this is a daunting task. And I've done my best to get out across the state, do one-on-ones with union leaders, not only in the Denver metro area, but on the Western Slope, down south, up north, and really focus on that relationship building and understanding. In that regard, I feel comfortable with the level of success. Also, at the Capitol, our goal this year was to advocate for the priorities and to defend the interests of our members, and really to set the stage for a pro-working family agenda in successive years. And in addition to that, we engaged in primary elections this year, and happy to say that 14 out of the 15 endorsed candidates won their primary. Moving forward, we're in full swing to run a robust political program for Labor 2018.
And we're going to get to that later on in the show under the political issues. So as my next question was, and I think you've already answered it, that you did travels within the state of Colorado to meet union leaders and rank-and-file memberships. But in your position, too, did you have, and I know this does happen, did you have any union travel out of state?
Yeah, so went to San Diego for Western State Feds Conference. It's the executive leadership of the 14 Western states, and also was able to go to Las Vegas for the Southwestern States Feds meeting to build momentum for Labor 2018.
Just one last question here on the update. What have you learned from the many union members here in the state of Colorado?
Reiterated to me was that union jobs change lives for the positive. And the CEOs of the wealthy corporations have not extinguished the fire within the members to fight like hell and, stand together in freedom.
All right, then, Dennis, on this Labor Day 2018, how many unions are affiliated with the Colorado AFL-CIO, and how many union members from the private and public sectors are now represented by the Colorado AFL-CIO?
165 unions are affiliated with the Colorado AFL-CIO, and that encompasses 130,000 union members, which is over 300,000 voters from union households.
That's impressive. Dennis, has there been any loss of members and per capita tax, that's dues for those of you in the listening audience, by the public sector unions since the recent Janus versus AFSCME 31 Supreme Court of the United States decision?
To my knowledge, in Colorado, it's been minimal, especially compared to the overall numbers as to those affiliated with the state federation.
Have you received any reports? I needed to ask this question. Mm-hmm. Have you received any reports from these affiliated unions of Freedom of Information Act requests from right-wing anti-union organizations for their membership lists in order to contact these union members so they can, quote-unquote, drop their membership in accordance with the Janus versus AFSCME 31 Supreme Court of the United States decision? And if so, how have these unions reacted?
So although I've heard stories in California, New York, Illinois, Oregon, and I believe Washington from union brothers and sisters, have not heard this happening in Colorado. And you hit the nail on the head. There's a dark web of corporations and wealthy donors that want to take the freedom away from working people. And if they try to infiltrate Colorado, we will respond accordingly.
All right, then. Dennis, let's move on to this. Union members
2017. This report was issued by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the U.S. Department of Labor, this past January 2018. It stated that 10.7% of the workforce, same as, 2016, were union members. 14.8 million overall, 7.2 million in the public sector, which has a 34.4% density there, but 7.6 million in the private sector, yet only a 6.5% density of their respective work jurisdictions. There was an increase of 262,000 union members in 2017. Good news. So with that, Dennis, what is the message here for the U.S. labor movement?
This, coupled with some other things, shows the winds at our back. 62% overall, we are at a 15-year high of Americans who approve of labor unions. They see unions as solutions to corporate and CEO greed, stagnant wages, income inequality, arbitrary and unfair work rules. Folks see that unions give them a voice and the ability to stand together to fight for what they deserve. We are rising, we're growing, and we're winning.
Dennis, this is under also part of that union members 2017. It was a response, and it was quote-unquote, biggest gains in union membership in 2017 were for younger workers. And that come from the Economic Policy Institute. I believe it's a think tank for the AFL-CIO. And this was on January 28, 2018. What it said is 3 in 4 of the new union members, that's 198,000, were among workers under the age of 35. If this trend continues, how could this invigorate the U.S. labor movement in the coming years and subsequently increase overall union density throughout the United States?
We need younger workers engaged and ready to enter leadership positions, Dennis, when you and I are long and gone. And coming over here today, I heard of another poll release that said 65% of workers under the age of 35 approve of labor unions. This is the highest out of any age bracket. And we are addressing current workforce trends that are increasing work insecurity, from the rise of the part-time work, unpaid internships, student-athletes, to other gig economy issues that come about. The National AFL-CIO created a Young Workers Advisory Council and spot on the AFL-CIO General Board for Young Workers in 2013 at the convention. Young worker groups are central to helping us develop and identify labor leaders today. They are ready for leadership roles beyond just their young worker group. This is going to be a culture shift. It's not going to happen overnight, but union membership growth depends on continuing young worker programs and continuing to be a force for positive economic change for all workers. This is going to show young workers the people, the power of the people of collective and collective action.
Well, I think that statistics in terms of how many were part of that 262,000, 198,000, were under the age of 35, I think that's just outstanding. And I think it's something to build on. I'm going to anxiously look forward to the union members' 2018 report when that'll come out this coming January. And if I'm just cautiously optimistic, it's going to grow and it's going to increase. So anyway, Dennis, this is, again, it's Labor Day. So let's move on to, the tough stuff, but the important stuff, and that's labor issues. So could you give an update on wage growth for all workers and their families, especially union workers, here in the state of Colorado and throughout the United States?
I can sum it up in one word, and that's stagnant. There's something fundamentally wrong with our economy. Dennis, the rich just keep getting richer while working people are working longer hours just to make ends meet. And despite year after year of increased productivity, we're not seeing corporations sharing in the fruits of their labor. And working families know the best way to get a raise, better benefits, and a voice on the job is through a union contract. We have to ensure that the big corporations that are profiting from Colorado's growth be responsible to Colorado's working people in our communities, paying decent wages and benefits, safeguarding worker protections, and paying their fair share of taxes. And working families know the best way to get a raise, better benefits, again, and a voice on the job is through a union contract.
Dennis, just to dig into this a little bit more, why is this a serious issue for all workers trying very hard every day to meet their basic needs of food, clothing, housing, medical needs, childcare, so on and so forth.
Real wages are not rising, yet the goods and services around us are. So how far we can stretch our dollars is not going the length that it needs to go. And as an example, wage growth is at 2.8%, inflation 2.9%. This has been going on for years and years.
So that means that, you know, while they, you know, the Trump administration and everything, when these reports come out, you know, on a monthly basis from the U.S. Department of Labor, they go, oh, look, this has been the highest wage growth, you know, in just, you know, decades or whatever embellishments they'll use. And they say 2.8%. But the ongoing neutral inflation rate now is 2.9%, like you mentioned. So it's a tenth of a percent backwards. And, if you calculate that on a monthly basis, then that means you'd be 1.2% down, you know, for the whole year. So it's a serious, serious problem. And, you know, whether it be corporations, city governments, state governments that have, union employees or any other employees, public sector employers, private sector employers, you need to wake up and think about your workers, because they're not living a good life, because a lot of them are well beyond the 30% threshold in terms of like paying for like housing. Affordable housing is something else we might want to talk about before the show's over. Dennis, this kind of segues into this. Income inequality. Unions were a major force in this country from 1947 to 1978. Since that time, 1979 to 2018, unions declined and subsequently led to our present situation of massive income inequality. Could you present some reasons, economic and political, for the decline of unions during this time frame?
Absolutely. So I want to just start by saying income inequality, you've seen the graph. As union density has gone down, the amount of profits and money going to corporations has gone up and near mirroring each other. Right now, CEOs earn 361 times the average worker. And
yeah, let's repeat that, 361 times more than the average worker.
While we're still denied wages, healthcare, retirement, security, and the quality of life that we deserve. And right-to-work laws, which were designated in the 1940s to reduce union strength and finances, are a big driver for massive income equality. And these laws, designed, developed, honed by business groups over the years, unfortunately have been successful. And none of the 10 states with the highest rates of unionization are right-to-work. And this is from the Economic Policy Institute, just to give a source there. They, on average, reduce union coverage by 9.6 percentage points. Along with that, I mean, people are sold a bill of goods. It doesn't guarantee a job. It comes with a $1,500 reduction in annualized wages on average for workers. So it takes hits out of the pocketbook and does nothing for worker solidarity.
Yeah, the economic factors, too, is it because I'm native to Beaver County, Western Pennsylvania. At one time, probably before I left to come to Colorado, I mean, I was in New Jersey at the time for 4 years, graduates getting a master's at Rutgers and being on staff for 3 years. But I'm the son of a steelworker, and I'm a son of an immigrant. My mother came from Ireland. And at one time, I think, when I graduated from college at Slippery Rock, I think that there were 37,000 union steel mill workers in Beaver County. The last I saw, and that was recently, and it might be a lot lower, is only 3,000. Hmm. That means that only 10% is left. And I just saw one statistic about that county now, is that last year they calculated that they lost 161 jobs. Well, there's all these jobs coming up. There's a lot of counties like that, not just in Pennsylvania, but other places. But they also, the worst part, and it's been going on and dramatically, they lost 1,000 people in 1 month in terms of the total population. But Dennis, I'm preaching to the choir with you because you're from Cleveland, Northeast Ohio. You're familiar with Lorain and the steel mills there, and they pretty much had the same thing.
Absolutely. Yep. I grew up around steel workers at the LTV Steel in Parma, Ohio, who were in my neighborhood who worked there.
Yeah, and don't forget, we also have to include the auto industry, which, you know, took a big hit too with, you know, some of them, you know, when, particularly when Ronald Reagan became president, it was almost like, you know, it was like a green light, go do whatever you want to run your companies. And if that means, you know, shutting down your plants and, you know, going to, you know, foreign soils and then outsourcing it back here, and then you get to make money, it's all about you, man. It's good for you. So, and then just with the political situation, you know, and that decline was, we had Ronald Reagan for 8 years and then George Bush number one for 1 year. Although, you know, the Democrats were a pretty good Tip O'Neill and everything in terms of fighting certain things in terms of being in control of Congress. But, you know, when we get up into like 94 or something like that with Newt Gingrich and the takeover, and particularly after the Tea Party thing in 2010, things have really gotten really bad. But Dennis, just to finish up on this income inequality, how has all of this had a negative impact on wage growth?
So the dollar that you and I have in our pockets, we can stretch it the way we should be able to if corporations shared in the profits that they're given. And back to the inflation versus average raise for workers.
Dennis, let's move on to this. You already mentioned it, and I want to dig into it a little bit more. Start off actually with some good news about this horrible subject. It's right to work states. This past Tuesday, August 7th, 2018, union members, all workers and their families, the National AFL-CIO, and the hardworking Missouri AFL-CIO and all their union members in the state, again, worked very hard to defeat Proposition A, which was right to work legislation. And they did this in the state of Missouri, and they did it by a 2-1 margin. That was great news. So with that said, and you talked about it a little bit, but how do right-to-work states, especially the more recent ones, since the 2000s, Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, West Virginia, and Kentucky, how do they impact with their right-to-work laws and break down working-class solidarity?
Yeah, I want to say on Missouri and Proposition A, labor knocked, heard the figure, 800,000 doors and made more than 1 million calls. I'm proud to report that over 20 Colorado union members descended upon Missouri in solidarity to aid their union brothers and sisters there. And to get to your question on right to work states and those specifically cited, I'm going to go back to the fact that these are designed to take away worker power, these laws. And it isn't coming from the people. These are driven by the Koch brothers, by the Bradley Foundation, by ALEC, by right-wing operatives to ensure the economy stays rigged for corporations.
And you can see, too, that with that report, and I got it over there in in my folder, like briefcase, and I keep it all the time and look at it, is it, in terms of that union members 2017, with these states, you know, you don't see no increase in union membership. It's just been a decline. And I want to mention in some of the brighter minds out there, not just older people, but a lot of younger people too. Oh, Dennis, you mentioned Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, West Virginia, and Kentucky. They all voted for Donald Trump. So you're right. They did. And these right-to-work laws help indirectly, as far as I'm concerned, facilitate that. Dennis, I know you're anxious, chomping at the bit, because you want to get into this. Political issues. So let's talk about the Colorado State Legislature 2018. Could you report on the collective strategy, objectives you set prior to this past session of the Colorado State Legislature 2018? And what was the primary obstacle here for the Colorado FL-CIO, or primary obstacles, plural?
Yeah, so the Colorado AFL-CIO affiliates set the legislative agenda for 2018 and believe in a stakeholder process where everybody within the Federation has voice. So reached out through a survey to all 165 affiliates and then had several meetings from there to whittle the list down. And the list became apprenticeship utilization, best value contracting, collective bargaining rights, local option for minimum wage, retirement security, and workforce development. And I'd also say we identified priority coalition fights to protect and expand worker rights and working people's quality of life. The primary obstacle here for the Colorado AFL-CIO, if I had to identify one, it would be the Senate State Affairs Kill Committee. And there were five labor-driven or supported pieces of legislation which died there. HB 1278, which is apprenticeship utilization of public projects. HB 1341, apprenticeship and vocational technical training. HB 1368, local control of minimum wage. HB 181001, family medical leave insurance program. And I believe that's it. So, oh, I'm sorry, HB 1298, Colorado Secure Savings Plan.
So, and this will be later on here in the interview. We got about 6 minutes left, but we're going to talk about it briefly. But again, like your primary, you did the state Senate, you know, the kill committee. But overall, they're in charge of the kill committee because they were in charge of the Senate by an 18-17 razor-thin margin. And I know you're going to change that this coming election.
We're going to do our damnedest.
We're going to do your best. That's for sure. Just to finish up there, Dennis, did workers and their families achieve any progress, either directly or indirectly, with this session?
Yeah, so directly, HB 1005, which required local education providers to provide notice to students and parents of opportunities for concurrent enrollment in post-secondary courses, which includes apprenticeship programs, passed both chambers and was signed by the governor. We did see HB 1256 pass the legislature in the final minutes, which maintained the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. I would say indirectly, we fended off right to work in Colorado yet again. This bill comes year after year. It was one of the best scenes that I'll remember from this legislative session. They had to open up an overflow room because so many different union members from across the state descended on the Capitol to ensure this bill never saw the light of day on the House floor.
Good job, as always. Dennis, the election, Tuesday, November 6, 2018. What special efforts are you and the Colorado AFL-CIO making for this important election? And just beyond that, has the endorsement process been completed for all state and federal candidates running for election?
Yeah, so we are tapping into the grassroots energy and the momentum labor has across the country, and we're going to channel that into canvases, phone banks, and pollings across the state, polling places across the state. Working people, including a large swath of swing voters in Colorado, are looking to the unions for guidance. They are trusted messengers, and across this state, community by community, we're going to mobilize the largest and most effective member-to-member political program in our history. Sparking change by doing what organizers do best, talking to each other. On the endorsement process, it's been completed. So we've endorsed in all seven congressional seats. We've endorsed for governor, attorney general, secretary of state, treasurer, in 37 state house seats, 12 state senate seats, one CU region, and four ballot measures.
Quite a bit of work, but I know that was a big collective effort. Has there been any action or effort towards ballot initiatives and or referendums or the such, anything like that?
Yeah, so for this year, we've endorsed Amendment 73, which is going to increase funding for education. Initiative 153, which is Let's Go Colorado, their transportation initiative. Proposition 111, to stop predatory payday lending. And initiatives 170 and 171, which deals with redistricting.
All right, then, Dennis, we're moving along really, really good, you know, but you, as always, the pride of Cleveland and Northeast Ohio and your parents and also a graduate of Columbia University, right? Ivy League school.
Case Western Reserve University, undergrad.
Yeah, Case Western Reserve, of course, Cleveland, Ohio. I'm sorry, I forgot that.
That's okay.
But let's begin and, you know, let's finish. I got two questions to finish up with. And, you know, this one's, you know, kind of a little bit repetitive from the previous one, but this is my passion. Voter turnout. How will the level of voter turnout impact all federal and state and local elections, with this midterm non-presidential election Tuesday, November 6, 2018.
Well, it's a good passion because turnout will be the main deciding factor in keeping pro-worker family majorities across the state. In just some examples, Barbara McLaughlin won her 2016 seat for HD 59 by less than 700 votes. She's got 100% rating from the Colorado AFL-CIO. Representative Danae Askar also has 100% rating from the Colorado AFL-CIO, won her seat, which is HD 46, by about 1,300 votes in 2014, didn't have a challenger in 2016. When you have vote margins this close, it's clear that the electorate is split in their decision, and turnout ends up being the deciding factor sorting winners from losers.
Yeah, and I got a bad story. Senate District 16, which you know, used to be our seat. It goes up into the foothills here and part of our Boulder Area Labor Council jurisdiction, Superior, and then up into, you know, Gilpin County, so on and so forth. Jeannie Nicholson lost that seat by about, I think, 284 votes, back at that time. Not in 216, but I think in 214. But so you can win some races, but if you have low voter turnout, you can lose races, and they're very close. You go, oh, I wish I would have voted. Anyway, Dennis, just to finish up with that question there, how will draconian and discriminatory photo ID laws, voter suppression, you know, methods play a part in this whole process in many states throughout the United States with this coming election?
Yeah, great question. I want to start with Colorado. And in many ways, thankfully, Colorado is the exact opposite of those draconian discriminatory voting laws you just mentioned. We will be the example and model for other states to show that you can expand access to voting while ensuring our elections are held to the highest standards of quality and transparency. And let me be clear, these laws that limit access to voting are designed by power brokers who see it as giving them a political advantage. In Colorado, single mom working two jobs has many options to vote by mail, in person, at a drop-off location, at a vote center. And she's got several weeks to do it. She's not registered, no problem. Same day registration takes care of that. And the same voter could be disqualified from voting in the state without same day registration. These types of laws, they're designed to limit the voice of working people. And we should be glad Colorado lawmakers came together to make sure voting here is simple and convenient.
Dennis, we have about 30 seconds left. My normal summary question: do you have any final thoughts or comments for this KGNU listening audience in the context of tonight's subject, Labor Day 2018, labor and political issues?
I do, Dennis. Yeah, Labor Day, it's a time for working people to honor the victories of those who came before us, but also preparing for the important fights ahead. These midterm elections present the next critical opportunity to secure a brighter future for working people in Colorado. We're rejecting the broken status quo. And as a wave of collective action sweeps across the country, working people are standing together to demand the fair economy and just society that we deserve. Let's use that momentum to elect pro-working candidates. Those listening, please get out, vote, and let your voice be heard. Don't wonder what if.
All right, then, Dennis, for those of you who joined us even later, the subject of tonight's program was Labor Day 2018, Labor and Political Issues. With us, a great guest, Dennis Doherty, Executive Director, Colorado AFL-CIO. Dennis, thank you for being on Labor Exchange at KGNU. And if you have any comments about this show or any other show on KGNU, please call 303-447-9911. And next week, Monday, September 10th, 2018, please listen to La Lucha Sigue at 6 p.m. This has been Labor Exchange, and I am Dennis Kreese for KGNU Community Radio.
Dip, 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 dip.